talk a bit about a qualitative study I did in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I'm left-handed, so clicking with my left hand throws me all off. I could also never drive in England. So I've got a number of slides, and I am the last speaker, so I'll keep the background kind of brief. But I want to give you a bit, just kind of a big picture of this relationship between HIV/AIDS and violence. I'm going to be talking about how providers, specifically medical and social service providers, view this relationship and also what they're doing to address this intersection. But I think just to take a big step back and do a little bit of a forest for the trees, what we know from the literature that exists so far is that HIV/AIDS and violence are related, connected, linked, whatever terms you want to use. Although very few studies have used those terms specifically, they tend to look at the relationship between HIV/AIDS and a specific form of abuse or violence, of course. So we know that. And then a limited number, very limited number, of prospective studies have shown, or suggested rather, that there might be some directionality here, that involvement with violence, and I pick those words carefully, involvement meaning you're experiencing the violence, you are witnessing the violence, any of the above, and might increase your risk for HIV or AIDS, and the other way around, that if you're HIV positive, that that may increase your risk of being involved with violence. So overall, there appears to be a bidirectional relationship, but you know, most of these studies are cross-sectional, so we often don't talk about directionality, but they're associated. What I've seen from review of the literature is that most of the studies tend to cover a relationship between HIV/AIDS and what I call the big three, which are child sexual abuse, intimate partner violence, and gender-based violence, which sometimes those latter two are synonymous, although not always, gender-based violence being a slightly, perhaps, more specific term, more likely with males abusing females, but intimate partner violence also including same-sex and transgender relationships, for example. And you also see a lot more gender-based violence, that term being used in a lot more international contexts, like India and Sub-Saharan Africa, things like that, in terms of its relationship with HIV/AIDS. And I'm not even following along my notes, where I brought them. And I wrote all kinds of little extra goodies to say. So where was I? Right, so what you don't hear talked about a lot, and this is my kind of little political stance to try to bring this back into the conversation and back into research, is the relationship between HIV/AIDS and suicidality and or self-harm. And when I say self-harm, I mean deliberate self-harm that is not suicidal or not necessarily suicidal in nature, like habitual self-harm. And we're that habitual self-harm thing and its connected properties with HIV hasn't been explored very much. We're starting, thankfully, to see again some research on how suicidality, and I mean suicidal ideation, in addition to actual attempts and completed suicide, seem to be related to HIV. And what some very recently emerging data show is that if you're HIV positive, you are more likely than people who are not positive to be suicidal, and that risk seems to be clustered closer to finding out that you are HIV positive. And so there was some research on this in the very beginning of the epidemic in the early 80s, and then it kind of was very quiet for a long time. It's now thankfully resurfaced. So overall, I think this diagram is just, because I really love Venn diagrams and use them whenever I can, I think just shows overall how there's crossover risk between HIV/AIDS and violence when we look at things from a very big picture point of view. So you've got the big three there in violence, intimate partner violence, child sexual abuse, and gender-based violence. And you have other forms of violence that are less studied, but we have seen some connections, including suicidality and self-harm, bias-motivated violence, otherwise known as hate crimes and bashing, that usually involves sexual minorities. Sexual abuse, although most of the literature is focused on child sexual abuse, we now know that sexual abuse at any point in the life, of course, actually increases your risk for HIV. This study that looked at that specific issue structural and social violence that look at these issues of social disparities. And community violence, whether you're involved as a perpetrator, you experience it, or you simply witness violence in your community or live in a community that has a lot of violence. And then you hear in some studies words thrown around like victimization, violence, abuse, trauma in these studies. And also the whole issue of whether you're perpetrating, being victimized, or you are being exposed to or witnessing violence, that these things might increase your risk for HIV/AIDS. And on the other side, the connection to HIV/AIDS could be that you're positive, and that is increasing your risk for various forms of violence. It could be increased that the violence is increasing your risk for transmission, or you're transmitting, or that you are getting infected. And also, just most of it seems to be focused around how violence increases your risk for involving yourself in HIV risk behaviors, including risky sexual behaviors, risky substance use, whether it's injection drug use or otherwise. My research shows that it's not always IDU, and negotiating safer sex, which was talked about a bit by Dr. Salazar. So with this mounting evidence of these connections, there have been some calls for, you know, a response to deal with this intersection of HIV/AIDS and violence. And UNAIDS has called for it, the AMA has called for it, and various researchers have also called for, you know, interventions on both sides, both the violence side and on the HIV side. So here's the question I pose: what is actually being done to address this connection that we seem to see existing? Two HIV risk reduction interventions have included specific intimate partner violence prevention components, and actually I will add to that, there was a great talk yesterday by Amelia Cobb from the Wright Group, who actually is doing an intervention with IPV providers, having them look at HIV risk in their female clients. But that makes three then. No interventions have been designed to simultaneously reduce risk of HIV/AIDS and violence at the same time. Beyond this, we don't know much. We also might ask, why did I decide to study providers instead of looking at this issue with the populations themselves? Well, I have two answers for that. One is that the job of providers is to intervene on a daily basis, so they're the people who would actually be doing any addressing of the intersection, at least directly. We can all design interventions, but we're not the ones who are actually putting them into play, generally. Providers are, I think, uniquely positioned to see patterns in their clients and patients that speaking to clients and patients themselves may not see. So it's kind of a very, I think, providers are a very efficient form of data collection. Actually, it can be quite broad. I'm somewhat embarrassed to use another one of these public healthy catchphrases, but you know, you can't write these long titles every time. So this is called the I Have study that I did, the Addressing the Intersection of HIV/AIDS and Violence study. There were a number of goals for the study. I'm just going to focus on the two blue ones, which are to indicate potential areas of overlap in the two epidemics from providers' perspectives. I'll talk about what they see as the connections, and also to describe what, if anything, at least in the San Francisco Bay Area where I did the study, is what's being done to address the issue. In terms of methods, it was a combination of purposive and chain referral sampling. I created a preliminary sampling frame by using some websites and also a referral database and also a guidebook for community resources for violence prevention. I also convened a community advisory board at the Center for AIDS Prevention Studies in San Francisco that helped and recommended additional people I drew from that sample. I made a list of agencies and sites, then I stratified them by the client and patient populations that the providers served, and I wanted the providers and those people I was interviewing to have clients and patients from a diverse group of populations by gender identification and gender, sexual orientation, age, homelessness, poverty, mental health, and mental illness, sex work, substance use, race, ethnicity, and criminal and juvenile justice, which the literature showed us are the characteristics of people that tend to be at risk of this intersection of HIV/AIDS and violence. And from those agencies, I interviewed the most qualified and or willing provider, whoever wanted to talk to me at those places once I did my stratification. And then here's the chain referral part. Once the interviews began, if the interviewees had a good experience, I asked them to refer their professional colleagues in their professional networks. I did qualitative interviews with 30 providers. They were one-on-one. In 2006, I used a semi-structured interview guide. I audio recorded and transcribed them and also took notes. The analysis, I would say, is a mix of a thematic analysis used by anthropologists. I'm half anthropologist. And also some more kind of traditional grounded theory, including memoing. I created a preliminary codebook based on my interview guide. I did some inductive coding that finished out the codes for the rest of the interview transcripts, and I used Atlas TI 5.2, which is, as you may know, is a qualitative analysis software to manage the data. Some characteristics of the participants. It was about an even split between those who were exclusively or primarily HIV/AIDS related in terms of their services and all those who were more violence related. And three providers did kind of an even split on the term in terms of their services. 5 minutes, okay. So here are the study participant characteristics, and I don't want to spend too much time on this except to say that in terms of the providers, it was about an even split of males to females. The age groups, the modal groups, were in the 30s and 50s. A little more than half were sexual minorities. About half had master's degrees. The modal group was white, but most were non-white. And the rest is not so interesting. So let's talk about the findings first. The HIV/AIDS violence connection. The first major finding is that most providers did perceive a connection between HIV/AIDS and violence in their clients and patients' lives, but the clients and patients themselves didn't tend to report this to the providers. It was from the provider's point of view by seeing people day in and day out and noticing patterns. So there's a disconnect there. The types of violence they perceived to be connected specifically to HIV/AIDS were, not a big surprise, intimate partner violence, child abuse, whether sexual or otherwise. Suicidality more so than self-harm, but they did cite this. Also community violence and bashing, and that was usually involving mostly men who have sex with men. Now, there was a tendency for some providers to interpret this question when I'd ask them, do you see a connection between HIV/AIDS and violence? There was a tendency for some to see that if it wasn't a direct connection, like if you weren't sexually abused or raped and got HIV from that, then maybe there wasn't a connection. So that kind of made some hesitant to say there is a connection. However, most did see a connection, and when they did, they almost always identified other factors that contributed to the connection. And here's an interview transcript of someone who talks about that. The male speaker is the interviewee, I'm the interviewer. Well, I just think that when you just do violence and HIV, meaning when you just study that, that there's more to it than just those two things. There's something else that makes that happen. I asked him that is, like self-esteem stuff or the substance abuse. If you add something like that to it, you probably get, or connecting the three together, you'll get a better sense of the violence and the HIV because it always attributes to something else. And all the way down at the bottom, there's always other indicators. And when you don't use those other indicators, you're not going to get a clear picture. In the last line, but the direct connection is going to be fewer than without that middle piece. So what you get is providers telling me that this is a mediation model. And this is a network view from Atlas TI. This is just to show you that it's a very complicated issue, and that one kind of off to the right that has all of the radiating codes to it is called explanatory factors for the connection between HIV/AIDS and violence. And boy, are there a lot of them. Here they are. These are the factors that I think are connecting HIV/AIDS and violence. The ones that came most to the top were substance use, mental health and mental illness, and also low self-esteem. But there were so many other issues, and they were all also driving each other. If I were doing a quantitative study, I'd say there's a lot of intercorrelation between them. The syndemic, this talk is about how, I call it the violence HIV/AIDS syndemic. The syndemic is a term that was coined by medical anthropologist Merrill Singer in 1994 when he talked about the SAVA syndemic, and it's two or more afflictions or epidemics that tend to drive each other. And this was the original model in 1996 of the SAVA syndemic, which is the substance abuse, violence, and AIDS syndemic. And I would say that the findings of this study support this theory, that look in this diagram, that violence and HIV/AIDS are not only connected to each other, but all these other issues, including mental health, mental illness, mental health issues, including illness, and psychiatric diagnoses, low self-esteem, substance use, and all those other factors that were in the previous slide, because they're connected to both HIV/AIDS and violence, are pulling them closer together. That doesn't mean that there's also not a direct connection between the two, although we can, again, speaking quantitatively, for example, you can control for these other issues in a statistical model, but you can't do that in real life, right? So when even though there are other issues, perhaps in a mediation model, that are connecting HIV/AIDS and violence, that doesn't mean that in real life they're not connected for the people who live with this intersection. I'm running out of time. 2 minutes. All right, now I want to just quickly talk about what's being done. And I want to just define a couple things. First, I want to define protocol, which are guidelines for all providers at a given site to follow, and distinguish that from practices, which is what individual providers do systematically or case by case. Well, it turns out that the data showed that protocols to assess this crossover risk between HIV/AIDS and violence typically are not being used. So there's not, so typically the institution doesn't have a rule that everyone follows, and that practices by individual providers to address this crossover risk between HIV/AIDS and violence at very best is on a case-by-case basis, and only kind of it pops up in an evaluation of the client or patient. And some providers do not address the intersection at all. And I finally want to end with who is best positioned to address this intersection. It seems that social workers appear to be at the dead center of this intersection because they are at the intersection of healthcare and social services, and that seems to be where HIV and violence are intersecting. So they may be the best to work with in terms of a training intervention to assess crossover risk, although physicians and therapists may also be good. I'll skip that. My last slide. The conclusions are that providers discern connections between HIV/AIDS and violence in the lives of the diverse client-patient populations they serve, that syndemic theory is helpful in understanding how HIV/AIDS and violence are linked from kind of a big picture perspective, and that potential cross-training for providers of violence-related and HIV/AIDS-related services should be explored further, which I do plan to do. Sorry for the rush there. I do want to acknowledge NIMH and Center for AIDS Prevention Studies at UCSF and the TAPS Fellowship at UCSF, and also my department at Cal State Fullerton.